Thank you very much for the opportunity to participate in this. This is back, I think, last year, John. Maybe the hair was a little bit bigger, better bottle of Grecian Formula 44 there, maybe, or something like that. But, yes, as Cindy indicated, the presentation is entitled today, Soil Quality Assessment, John Duran's Challenge and the Scientific Community Response. And what I want to do today is walk us through a little bit of the evolution of soil quality assessment, what I've termed coming full circle in association with a Rodale conference that he and I and many others were able to participate in 1991, I believe it was, John's subsequent challenge and the response that was made, our big surprise, and where is soil quality today? John would be the very first to admit that the evolution of soil quality assessment, there's very great deal that's owed to all of those that came well before us. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. And these ones that I've highlighted in red are out of this outline, the topics that I think I've got time to try to get with you today. A little bit about the history. Martin Alexander's proposing soil quality criteria, as I put that together, I thought about that was probably about the time John began his graduate work and maybe was a bit of inspiration in some of his discussions to what eventually evolved into that. But then they're really getting active in this assessment area was with the Rodale Conference in 91, the Lancaster Study and John's Challenge, which occurred in 1993, our big surprise in 1998, and then the 21st century, which is really an exponential scientific community response to John's challenge. As I said, John would always be the first to thank those who came before us and set the way in terms of soil quality assessment, and this is just a tiny, tiny smidgen of those that were leaders for all of us and the background of trying to understand our soil resource and how to care for it more effectively and how to manage it better. And, of course, the one quote by Leonardo da Vinci there that we still know more about the movement of celestial bodies than about the soil underfoot. And we are continuing to be questioned, to be quizzed by our stakeholders, our farmer producers, about why does my soil work that way? What can I do? We've got a lot of work in the scientific community to move forward on yet, but we are all blessed by those that have come before us. But those, despite their efforts and the challenges that we have seen with back in the era of the Dust Bowl on the left there, but we still got too much wind erosion today. The water erosion of the early part of the 20th century there on the left, but we still got too many fields that got water erosion, cutting gullies, what I call truly mismanagement of the soil resource. So John has set us on a path and a task, as he said, to care for this soil resource. But we've got a long ways to go, and to put together we will accomplish it. Now, John and I knew of John's work when I was first joined the Agriculture Research Service, but in trying to recall when we really had our first sit-down together and discuss soil management and what was needed. As far as I could recollect, John, it was when you were on your detail at Coshocton and you made a tour of the southeast and came down to Florence there. And I believe that was in the mid-1980s there. It was about the time that we were doing a lot of soil penetration and other soil assessments of that coastal plain soil there, which is shown on your right there with that AP horizon. What was known as an A2 back then, now known as the E horizon for the alluviated horizon, and then subsequently the B. Now what's shown on the left side there, that's a 5/8 inch diameter solid stainless steel rod that we had rigged up as a soil penetrometer. And that 45 degree goose neck and that rod there is because the scale measuring penetration resistance pegged at somewhere over 2,000 PSI, trying to go through that A2. So this kind of gives a little bit of the kind of challenges that John and I were talking about at that time with regard to How do we manage this soil to, at that time, feed what we were projecting at the 6 billion people? Now we are looking at 7 billion at the end of this month and 9 billion in another 20 years or so. There's lots of challenges associated with the soil resource and the soil quality assessment. John and I then reconnected at the Dick and Sharon Thompson Farm when I had the opportunity to come to Ames and part of the new staff for the then called Soil Tilth Laboratory, now the National Lab for Ag and Environment. And we were out on John's farm, and that was the beginning of doing some soil sampling together. Looking at Dick's system there, which is illustrated by that lower right-hand picture, that despite using ridge tillage and a lot of really good organic practices, Dick still had a little bit of a rooting problem there in that the wheel traffic side there to the left there was totally devoid of any kind of observable plant roots compared to the right side of the plant. And obviously it got into a lot of the how do you manage the nutrients, how do you manage all the other aspects of the soil resource. Some of the little techniques that John was working at there with the respiration, the infiltration, those things.
And can you back up one?
I certainly can.
I should point out NRCS was new at this game, and I gave them the tools and told them about these cans that you can use to measure respiration. Well, they thought they'd paint them black. That's a good idea. I said, I think you might want to reconsider that. What happens is that glass just sucks the heat, and when the sun shines and you get your temperature is just spiking, you end up sterilizing the soil. And they went to Mylar reflective covers.
Those are bits and pieces, John, and I hope this whole symposium goes with those little additions. And I've tried to build in that opportunity in my talk here, so that's wonderful. But as I said, those early techniques led to the soil quality test kit, which Mark Liebig is going to be going over here with a lot more detail with you and some of the experiences he had with John in that. With regard to our interaction, the coming full circle and the 91 Rodale Conference, this was shortly after, again, when the Soil Tilth Lab became established. One of the first papers was changing tilth into recognizing the biological attribute, and John and I were invited to come out to Rodale for a symposia there. And the full circle refers to J.I. Rodale's 1942 vision there of a soil care revolution, creating a healthy society and a country of prosperous farms and healthy, vigorous people. Again, the relationship from those who came before us, understanding the importance of our soils and the fact that soils is the foundation for the people we need to feed. And also out of that conference, we began to really begin to define what we meant by soil quality. The inherent soil quality, or that establishes the absolute capabilities in the absence of human intervention. And of course, this, from the soil survey perspective, was what set up the land capability ratings and things like that. There was also then the dynamic soil quality aspect, which really that ties into identifying the human impact, the impact of human intervention, and increases the awareness of how our decisions, our land use decisions, the management practices we choose to impose on that resource, affect the resource. The outcomes of that conference were that soil quality assessment should not be limited to productivity, but should also include environmental quality, human and animal health, food safety, and quality. That assessment, however, required the good indicators, and this was another accomplishment that John and Tim Parkin and many others contributed to in the first soil quality book, that those indicators must integrate soil physical, chemical, and biological properties and processes. They must be accessible to many users, sensitive to management and climate. And I don't know if Steve Schaefer's in here, but we were thinking about databases two decades ago here in terms of giving it the components of existing databases for the soil quality assessment there. So we've been at it for a while. That led us to the Lancaster study. Now, this was a study that, from my perspective, we initiated in 1991. In reality, it was initiated 10 years prior to that, following the first energy crisis, so it's a little bit deja vu for my current research efforts, but they had been imposed these treatments over there in Lancaster, Wisconsin for 10 years where they had three different tillages, no removal, removing the residue or taking that removed residue and doubling it up. And then we went in there and measured the chemical, the biological, physical indicators and evaluated and summarized them in a nice manuscript for peer review. We turned it loose to John as a peer review person, and he acknowledged that, yeah, you guys are sort of on the right track. You're looking at all three of the areas. You've got a good start on this, but wasn't there something more that you could do with that data for a more complete true soil quality assessment? And then, having had the opportunity to do some systems engineering training shortly before that, we responded by applying those principles, developing some hand-drawn scoring functions to normalize and subsequently combine the data. And we had this idea of a minimum data set, the physical, chemical, biological indicators, going through scoring functions to an index. Now, thanks to Susan Andrews and Brian and many others that are going to be talking a little bit later today, we've come a long ways from those hand-drawn functions with the ability to interpret it. But conceptually, that's what we're doing with this information, to bring it into a soil quality assessment index. The first papers that I really can sort of talk truly about this assessment process, of course, were those two from the Lancaster study, one looking at crop residue effects on soil quality, and one looking at tillage effects on that, and some of the different factors. And the crop residue one there, showing the legacy effects 4 years later, that where that double residue had been. And again, all the issues associated with soil carbon that we're well aware of and the management of that, having those long-lasting, long-term effects. Soil quality continued to evolve the assessment processes with the special publication 35 on defining it for a sustainable environment methods book, the Green Book, that still gets held up as a resource and a guideline for many, many different applications. And then ultimately we had worked together on this paper from Soil Science Society of America Journal on the concept, definition, and the framework for evaluation. That was what was happening fast and furious during the 90s. But then there was a big surprise that John and I got. Both of us sent a peer review paper to peer review. And it was like, Bob, and I called John. I said, John, did you get Bob's paper? He said, yeah. And he's got some good points there, Doug. Calm down. Let's see what we can do a little bit with him. But they were a bit of a shock to most of the soil science community and the follow-up in Advances in Agronomy. But John weathered through this and was an inspiration for all of us, because by the early 2000s, I think we all realized, in the words of Mahatma Gandhi there, that honest disagreement is a good sign of progress. And really the quote there, and I attributed this to Bob because it was off of one of his presentations, that none of us was being persecuted through all this, and probably all of us have been a little bit less than perfect views. So that was a big step forward in this assessment line. Now the 21st century. There's really what I consider an exponential response to that original challenge that John gave. In putting this talk together a couple of weeks ago, I decided in the morning, I'll just do a quick Google search on soil quality. 9,730,000 hits on the term soil quality. I know that this is not unrealistic, because in today's email, I was contacted by a new student in the Netherlands saying the Dutch ministry had just charged his group with an opportunity to look at soil quality indicators once again. Each week we have in countries around the world the concept of soil quality being taken on, and as Brian shared with me a couple weeks ago and going on, is they're recognizing the need to adapt the framework that we've developed and things for their local areas. And that's why we always referred it to as a framework, not a model of soil quality. It's an approach, assessment. It's become an integral part of SARE, NEPA, SEEP, Conservation Effects Assessment Project, and the Biofuel Feedstock Production Projects. Soil quality assessment is a foundation that's used as one of the key measures. And there have been many different soil quality assessment tools developed and being used. This symposium will touch on some of those. Some of the recent accomplishments, we used it in cropping system evaluations, and again, focused in on which are the key indicators for, a continuous corn versus a forage-based system. Brought in some studies in Wisconsin there where liquid manure, dairy manure alone, did not improve soil quality, but if you combined it with cover crops, then you had the beneficial effect together. Again, it's this emphasis on the systems approach. The CEEP evaluations, ARS Cropland CEEP has 15 different watershed projects whereby we've worked as a team across the country to go in and do analysis of soil quality indicators, some 24 plus indicators, and the first of the watershed papers with Diane Stott as the leader on that paper was out this year. There's two more at least reported on here at this meetings this week, one from the Leon Creek watershed, one from the Oklahoma one. That you can see, Gene Steiner and Diane Stott, I think, are the lead authors on those two from the CEEP work. Then the corn stover feedstock evaluations, as many of you are aware, I've had the opportunity to come full circle in my personal research career, having started with removing crop residues for biofuel production after the first energy crisis. Now we got REAP going on. And unlike Janet and John's REAP, that's the ARS Renewable Energy Assessment Project. There's lots of REAPs out there in the world, but in that case, we looked at the effects of stover removal and how the soils were how they were functioning based on their inherent potential after 3 and 5 years of stover harvest. And of course, this is a foundation for a lot of others. Some of the other tools for soil quality assessment that are out there. The Agro Ecosystem Performance Tool out of Mandan, the Soil Conditioning Index, which comes out of NRCS efforts there. It has been an integral part of a lot of their policy work. The Cornell Soil Health Test, and of course then the Soil Management Assessment Framework that Susan will be probably talking a little bit about that approach and what was done. But the real impact that John had was that soil quality assessment increased awareness amongst different groups of people. It brought people into dialogue, into discussions about what was going on and what their management decisions were doing to that soil resource and how can it be sustained and improved. And the other one that was real important, and this was especially through the NRCS, is that soil quality became a term that our non-agronomic, non-farm community could understand much better, with urban youth learning about soil resources and the importance of conservation and even homeowner applications of soil quality assessment. So it went far, far beyond what anything that I had initially envisioned when John threw that first challenge to me. So in summary, John, I simply want to say thanks for the friendship and the challenge to do more with my data. It's been one heck of a ride, and may you and Janet have many more years to truly savor the memories and enjoy the impact that you've had. Thank you all.